So when we go back to those percentages,
yeah, fair.
You're looking at the high number that you gave for percentage in creating these graphs, I assume.
So we didn't. This was not an expected probability. This said, with full implementation of each of those five initiatives,
at the percentages that you gave.
The dollars amount.
Right.
We did not do the expected return, you know, factoring in the dollars multiplied by the percent likelihood. Mm-hmm. This was assuming 100% implementation at the dollar amounts in the far right-hand column.
Right.
This would be the change in your net income year to year and your cumulative impact on cash.
But obviously that can change.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a whole bunch can change.
Yeah, this is, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess it's just important to recognize that it's 100% implementation and success then too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is just the numbers to support the graphic. Most people would probably look at the graphic and be more interested in that than the numbers. But these are the numbers to back those up. We did do a the one recommendation that's outside of our control is the conversion of the long-term care beds, because that's going to be dependent upon the state taking action. So what we wanted to just show you was, if the state for whatever reason decides that we're not going to allow this bed conversion, again, even though it's been done, you know, everywhere else in the north, in the northwest and all over the United States, if they choose not to do that, the net income will continue to remain positive with the implementation of the other four initiatives, and cash essentially your cash position will continue to remain positive and grow to about $9.3 million over 10 years. That is the report, unless you want us to pull up the other one.
Okay, I have a question for Rob or Cynthia.
Yeah.
How much does health insurance cost right now for staff? What's the, or unless if Eric or Jonathan know.
What a staff person pays for a single person?
What's the total, employer commitment? Annually.
Oh gosh, that's in our, you've got that, don't you?
It's cumulative. For fiscal 17, our health insurance expense was $2.5 million.
Okay. And do you know what the average increase has been annually over the last like 5 or 10 years?
It was, this past, the next year we're looking at about a 12% increase. Two or three years ago, it remained relatively flat. It was only until the last couple of years that we've had the bigger increases.
Okay.
But it was about somewhere between 12 and 15% this year. We had budgeted for 17.5, and I think it came in at 12.
Yeah, we were all happy about that.
We
school district
happy.
And
yes.
City, too.
One of the other opportunities that was identified for us to look at is doing a self-insurance program, which we've talked about with both at the city level and the school to pool together into a self-insured pot. And so that is also one of the projects that identified that we should do a little more research on with those three organizations. We had talked about it, in the springtime, both, like I said, with Jay and with the school district. So there's some opportunities to, change the way we are providing that benefit to the employees that might make it hopefully a little more stable.
Thank you. I was just curious. I'm a little nervous about the 3% assumption in the model. I tend to budget very conservatively, personally, and I do like the numbers you're giving us, though.
And I think I'm going to go back to the graphic on slide 14, and essentially say with implementation of these, if you look where your bottom line is in the top graphic with implementation, you're looking at north of $1.1 million bottom line, there's room to kind of have increases in your health insurance costs that go beyond that 3%.
Okay. Kevin?
So you said you went back to 2013 and looking at previous years. Was in that in part to build confidence in the numbers that you're using for the 16 and then the projections beyond? Because we know fiscal year 16, the hospital did much better than it had been doing.
17.
Okay, 17.
Yeah, 17.
Things looked much better than they had been in the past. So it's curious to actually look at the 17 numbers and use those as the numbers that, you know, you base all your modeling off of. But I guess in hearing that you actually looked back at 13, 14, 15, 16 as part of your analysis, does that build confidence in being able to use 17 as your numbers?
A lot of times what we do is when we want to go back and show historical financial information, whether it be a 4-year trend or something like that, it's often in cases like this, it's the call to action. I mean, we can't continue on this way. So let's show those numbers to say we've got to do something different. Now, what you all did beginning in 16 and into 17 is you recognized the historical trend is not sustainable and you did things. Again, as I mentioned earlier, home health volume has doubled and rehab volume has gone up another 10-12%. And our nursing home volume, you know, and if you think about nursing home volume, if you get paid $957 a day by the state Medicaid program and your census goes up by 4 on average, you multiply 4 times 365 days in a year times $957, that's a lot of dollars coming, new dollars coming into the Sitka Community Hospital, and that's what happened. So we had specific growth in a number of areas that has all been part of this improved financial position. We did exclude, one of the reasons that 17 looked probably better than it should have is because there was a prior period adjustment, kind of amount that was from 2015 that came through as income in 2017. We excluded that from the go forward calculations. And that was $1.3 million.
So by the same token, Eric, if that number 14 goes down, it also is a huge impact.
Yep. So actually that was one of the action plans that we talked about today with the management team. And they believe that essentially, talking to the managers, they believe that if they had more beds, that volume could be higher, say 15 or 16 or even 17. And again, this goes back to if we can get this long-term bed conversion, we could probably get a few more nursing home residents in to Sitka Community Hospital.
And be reimbursed more.
Correct.
Just I'm trying to get perspective down here. Perspective. So what I'm seeing here is if, in your view, everything goes right, this is where we're at.
Absolutely.
Okay. And if everything doesn't go right, we're somewhere in between that blue and red.
That's correct.
Okay.
And so it comes down to what do we, I look at it and say, I want to know from the assembly, where are we tracking 6 months from now? Has that probability changed for each of these five initiatives? Right? Has it gone up to 100% for three of them? Has one of them come off? And then kind of, because what's going to happen is you're going to know from a probability perspective, kind of within 6 months, what you can do and what you can't do. I think we can do all of them, frankly. And then you'll see the return in your financial statements probably 9 to 12 months out to the extent that we have been able to implement these.
Are there any more healthcare opportunities for Sitkins in this scenario?
Healthcare opportunities.
Expansion of services.
Some of the things that we really talked about that we hadn't done a lot was there's a concept called the patient-centered medical home, where it's going to be driven by your primary care providers, where we get much more active in caring for the health of the population, as well as being more proactive to our chronic patients, more active management, disease management, and those types of things. Those are things that we have not done as we have a lot of opportunity to do much better there and be much more proactive in creating health within our community. I think that's a great opportunity. And then in terms of more services, again, I mean, home health is another opportunity. We think we can even grow that volume another 50% over above what it is today, and it already has gone up 100% from last year. There's opportunities there, and it's just we just haven't been able to provide the service at this point to the level which Sitkins are looking for. So there's lots of opportunity here for us to really get out and provide more services to folks here that actually could use some services.
Okay, so when we start talking about opportunities and services being developed or provided, we have to also recognize the fact that we do have another service provider here in town. What happens with this model or any of the, you know, services or the things that we're providing when they do the same and then they amp up their level of competition to try to drive things more towards them?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we factor all of that in?
So I look at this and say, over the next 10 years, we hear a lot about the industry transitioning from a volume-based payment system to a value-based payment system. And there's lots of initiatives coming out of Washington, D.C., the physician payment changes coming out of the new law that was passed called MACRA. And as we start to move payment towards this value-based payment system, organizations will not be standalone organizations. There's going to be alignment. There's going to be increasing need for organizations to come together. I've been giving a talk all over the country the last 4 years on the future of rural healthcare, and one of my big takeaways is, and one of my leave-behinds is that as the payment systems transition to this new environment, alignment is going to become key. And so I think over time, there's going to be an increasing imperative for these two organizations to work together. That doesn't have to be today unless it's mutually beneficial to both organizations. And I'd like to think that there were some opportunities for that to happen. But I do know that over time, it's going to become more of an imperative.
So I have a question on your guys' opportunities here. Of the five opportunities, is this typically the opportunities that you present across to your, say, 350 hospitals that you've looked at before? And the reason I'm asking here is because three of these, OB services, surgical services, and clinic optimization, seem to be what hospital leadership has been pushing the assembly to head down that direction over the last year or so.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, each of those specifically, the clinic optimization, that generally clinics, providers will see anywhere between 18 and 22 patients a day. That's kind of benchmark. That's standard practice operations. We're not at that level at all, which to some degree means that our clinics are not nearly as efficient as they could be. And so in terms of the clinic optimization, which again also includes the 340B, 340B or recommendations, if a hospital is at this point, if a critical access hospital is not doing 340B, it is absolutely a home run. It's a recommendation that happens every time. If a clinic is not seeing, you know, north of 18 to 19 visits a day per provider, there is a recommendation every time in our report on that. In terms of the discontinuation of OB, if this is one of those very interesting things where you do have two providers in a community with a volume. Generally, we say that you really should have a volume of about 200 deliveries a year to be able to achieve those economies of scale, to be efficient and safe. And even if we combine services, we're not going to get there on this island, because I think we're about 100 deliveries a year. And so this is one of those that if we have a rural hospital delivering 35 babies a year, and there's another hospital within 15, 18 miles away that are providing the same service, we recommend that the hospital get out of that OB business, the delivery piece of it. We recommend they maintain prenatal and the follow-up, but the delivery, we don't recommend that stay in a low-volume, small rural hospital.
And then in your 100-page report, will there be other opportunities listed that were necessarily modeled out?
That was why we spent all day with 30 managers that we presented the entire 100, you know, we cut it down to about 80 slides to present to them. But when we presented that to them, they identified 12 other recommendations that weren't involved here that they are moving on and have developed action plans to implement. And you know, what I would like, you know, I would, if Assembly, ask and see the status of those 90 days from now, 120 days from now. You know, check and see where those are. Because right now they are very interesting, and I got to give credit to the management team that was here today. It was a great day of high energy. When we got done, everyone's exhausted, but we came up with some stuff that could really change the hospital that aren't necessarily built into this model.
And then, as far as surgery goes, in mm-hmm. your experience, are surgical centers typically loss leaders, or are they a profit center for a hospital?
Generally, a profit center.
So a well-run surgical center can be a profit
Absolutely.
Center.
Absolutely. And the discontinuation of 24/7 general surgery and just going to scheduled services, that's one of the other ones that I guess you asked that I didn't answer directly. Most rural, you know, so often you'll hear from rural hospitals, they'll say, boy, if we give up the 24/7 general surgery, we're not a full hospital anymore. And to that, I generally ask, well, are you doing 24/7 orthopedics? Are you doing 24/7 cardiology? Are you doing 24/7 neurology or neurosurgery? And it really is where's the most efficient place to deliver, nighttime surgery when it's, emergent surgery overnight? You really want to consolidate that at a hub. You don't have to have that at a rural hospital where you have a whole standby crew waiting for maybe two emergent surgeries in a month.
So what does that do to ER services at the hospital?
Shouldn't have effect at all.
So if you have a critical need, and maybe not even all that critical need, in an EMS situation where the medics are making a decision where they're going to take somebody, they're not going to take them to someplace that they know if they do need some sort of surgical service or there's any mm-hmm. remote possibility of right. that, they're not going to come to that hospital. They're going to go to the hospital that has the 24/7.
That's correct.
So what does that do to your ER when a lot of your service is all of a sudden driven away?
So our ER volume last year was about, in 2016, it was about 2,100 visits a year. And it dropped to about 1,800 visits in 2017 because of the opening of the urgent care. The ER is not the big driver of revenue within Sitka Community Hospital. The big driver of revenue is the clinics, the nursing homes, all of the ancillary services that are provided to the community. Those are your home health, all of these other kind of complementary services. Your ER is not your big revenue driver. It's important, but it's not life and death, no pun intended.
But it is a level of staffing that you have to have, right? So if it's not a driver and you're not... you're not bringing in all that much to it.
Yeah.
What are you doing with your staffing? Because in the report,
These guys run a very efficient staffing model related to the emergency room, where the staff is primarily housed in the inpatient unit, and then when a patient presents, then the emergency room comes into gear. So it's a very efficient staffing model of the emergency room. Because they are low volume. I mean, 1,800 visits a month is very low volume. A year, excuse me.
I would also add that the number of trauma patients Sitka Ambulance covers is relatively low in Sitka. We have low speed limits. We don't see a lot of the stuff you see on the big city streets and stuff down south. We do have trauma cases, and hospitals do go on divert when the surgeon's out of town or the CAT scan's down or something like that. But it's relatively rare that it affects where you take someone in my experience.
I think the one other point is, and it ties back to Cynthia's presentation earlier, is that right now that $1.6 million is essentially built into this model right here, where operations are funding that $1.6 million. And so I find that interesting. And a piece of that, 40% of it, and the extent your Medicaid is cost-based every fourth year and then trended forward, a big piece of that is actually paid for by either Medicare or Medicaid. So it's a very efficient way of funding a $1.6 million liability that's your post-retirement benefit.
Do we have any other questions?
I was just curious, this is more for the CEO. I was just curious, do you know what percentage of Sitka uses Sitka Community Hospital?
We really don't have a way to track that or break it down, because our patients come and go. Patients go from us to Sitka Medical to search. So I don't have a feel. I think we consider, our panel is about 2,000 patients, but it fluctuates. I mean, somebody, you might not see somebody for a year, and are they still a patient? They are when they show back up. I'm not sure how many we would see in a year, of how many Sitkins we would see in a year. I thought it was very interesting that, Search pointed out that they thought 70% of Sitkins received some sort of service at Search. But I don't have. I'm not sure how I would get that figure. A similar figure for us.
Okay.
We could try to do it. But,
oh no, it's fine. Yeah, I was just curious. So what you did say is there's about 2,000 people that live in Sitka that use Sitka Community. Is that correct? At some time,
it's like we consider
not necessarily every year, but
that's what we kind of.
They have
look,
charts there. Can we go there? How many charts do you believe?
I think we are. I don't know if Teresa is here. She might be able to answer that.
Oh wow! Okay, well that wouldn't be easy.
Right.
Okay.
That's the thing. It's
well over 100%.
Thank you.
So I
thank you.
We can discuss it and see if there's a way we could, because I think it would be an interesting number to
yeah,
know
I would
as
just,
well. But
I would be,
I'm not
I'm
sure
just
how
curious
we would,
to know
how we would get it.
Thank you.
And Rob, I think that's an interesting number as well, and I'm not sure why it elicited guffaws that. Somebody on the assembly would want to know how many Sitkins use the hospital. I think that's a really important question, and I don't think it should be treated as anything less than that.
We're more about the number of charts,
perhaps,
because we're dealing with converting to electronic.
No, I understand.
It was
your response. It was perhaps folks behind you that had an interesting response. I want to thank you guys for this presentation personally. I can see a range now, based on this chart. And it could go as low as the blue line, I would assume, or it could go as high as the red line, somewhere in between, depending on how things go. So that gives me a really, really good perspective on your work. One of the things that I really have to applaud you for saying, and I typed it out as hopefully a verbatim quote. You said, these two organizations are going to have to align, but it doesn't have to happen today. And I think that that was a really brave statement on your part, and an honest statement on your part. And I don't know if you're planning on saying that, but I think that that was a very, very important thing to say, and I appreciate your honesty with that.
Thanks.
Please, Stephen.
So now diving as deeply as you have into this hospital and presenting us this information that you have, knowing that red line is best case scenario, blue line is worst case scenario, is it your recommendation that Sitka Community Hospital should attempt to continue to stand on its own?
So let me just say, this is the best case scenario given these five scenarios.
Correct.
Okay. Anything that we did today outside of these five scenarios is additional opportunity. So this is not necessarily best case. This is the case of the five scenarios modeled out over time.
Okay.
So I believe that Sitka Community Hospital could stay independent for the foreseeable future, but I would like to see a check. You know, you guys, you know, 6 months from now, 8 months from now, you check and see what the... You know, we estimated these probability of these five scenarios. Where are we now, 6 months from now, on the implementation of them? And is there a change in the expected financial performance associated with each one of them? And I would expect you guys to kind of ask that question. In addition, I would like you to ask 6 months from now that this document, these action plans that were developed today that go out beyond outside of this, what's the status of those? And then you'll have an idea 6 months from now on the likelihood of this coming true and the implications of that as it go forward. So I think Sitka Community Hospital for the foreseeable future can be successful with changes as we discussed here and other changes that you haven't seen but are being worked on as we speak.
Thank you.
Maybe just one more comment, really, just sure. To mention something here. I mean, we have two scenarios. I understand that. The status quo and, you know, best case scenario, if you will, given the circumstances. But I'd also like to see something that would just break even, you know, something that shows that the hospital is making it work, you know, not necessarily having to show a profit of any kind, just, you know, where's the break-even scenario? But just a comment.
Fair.
Any other questions? Well, thank you, gentlemen. And Rob, if you'd like to close.
I guess I have one more comment I want to make. The two big projects for us that are going to be important moving forward are the EHR, you know, the Cerner project, and then the clinic modular. So those are the two real projects that are important part of making a lot of this work, you know, the clinic optimization, not just the space, but just getting an electronic health record system in the clinic. We really, you know, it's an important part of this project. So, you know, those are two big decision points that are right now at pretty much at the assembly level. And you just want you to consider that as you, especially on Tuesday when you're deciding which direction to go. You know, for us to really be successful, we'll need to make some movement on those two big projects. And the EHR is the most important one. So I just wanted you to keep that in mind, you know, as we're making a decision about how to move forward and whether to move forward with the RFP process. And also offer up, you know, that Both the board has had discussion about that RFP process. Administration, we're certainly interested in participating in that as you develop it, however you would like us to. We would like to be considered, you know, when you are working on that process.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, thank you everybody, and have a wonderful evening.